Okay, so thank you for the invitation. And today's talk is about a process that is known as loop erased random walk. So before I'm even going to define it, I want to do a quick poll. So how many people here have heard about this before? Just what? No, the loop, about the loop erased part. Okay. No, but yeah, I just want, yeah. So actually much better than I expected. So that's nice. So, okay, so let me explain why. Yeah.
Can I ask the zero-order question?
A what?
The zero-order question.
Yes.
Did you say three dimensions?
I'll explain where three dimensions come into, and but mostly the talk is about two dimensions.
Okay.
But you know, we're gonna like squint a bit in the three-dimensional direction, but not too much. Okay, so before I explain why you should or shouldn't know what is loop erased random walk, let me just define it. So this is, the definition is very simple. It is, you interpret the name literally. You take some graph. At this point, it doesn't even have to be a lattice. You do a random walk on this graph, and whenever the random walk closes the circle, returns to some vertex that is already visited, you just erase this. You erase the loop that is created, and you continue. And when a new loop is created, you erase that too, and so on and so forth, until some stopping condition. The stopping condition, which will be popular in this talk, is just to do it in a domain and stop on the boundary. And you get a simple path, so path with no loops, from your starting point to the boundary. So this is the definition, very simple to define. This was invented by Andrew Lawler in 80. And this is extremely related to the following model called uniform spanning tree. Oh, that's nice. These are also related, that it's, you know, people usually refer to them as being one and the same thing. So let me define this model again on a general graph. So a spanning tree is just some subgraph of the graph that you started with that has no loops. And this is what makes it a tree and reaches every vertex. This is what makes it spanning. There was a question? Okay. And uniform means here that you have your graph, finite graph, you make a list of all the spanning trees, and you pick one randomly with equal probabilities. All spanning trees have the same probability. Is this clear? So this doesn't seem very connected, right, on first glance, but as I said, they are very strongly connected. So let me start with the light version of the connection. Okay, so light version. This is due to Robin Pimentel, I think. Suppose you fix 2 points in advance in your graph. Okay, you pick a spanning tree from the uniform distribution. So this is some kind of tree. And in this tree, there is a single path between these two vertices. So the path between these two vertices that you fixed ahead behaves is just some random simple path. Okay? It turns out that it has exactly the same distribution like the distribution of the loop erasure of random walk starting from one vertex and stopped when it first hits the other vertex. Okay? In particular, this implies the following fact, that loop erased random walk between A and B is symmetric to where you start and where you stop. And this is not obvious at all. Right, random walk is symmetric, but this process of loop erasure is not symmetric, right? Let's do the simplest case. Right? So here is our point A and here is our point B. If you loop erase from A to B, then you go like this, then you erase this loop, and you end like this. But if you loop erase from B to A, then you go like this, erase this loop. Why didn't I use the color choke? Anyway, so so as you can see, the process of loop erasing is not symmetric. What is, when you loop erase random walk from the start or from the beginning, or from the end, you get different paths, but they have the same distribution. So this is somehow stochastically symmetric. Okay?
The consequence of the color is the statement is not real, but this path that seems real.
Yes, yes, it needs to be proved. The proof is not very difficult, but it needs to be proved. Okay?
This is tremendous.
Yeah, even directed, I think. Yeah, I think even directed. Is that true? No, sorry. I mean, this claim is true on directed graphs, but on directed graphs, the path in the uniform spanning tree is not reversible. So, but the symmetry is true for any graph. Okay, so and the heavy version, this is known as Wilson's algorithm. David Wilson was out to find an algorithm for sampling a uniform spanning tree, right? You can't just list and pick, right? This is nice theoretically, but algorithmically, if you look at an n by n by n lattice, then this is the number of spanning trees is exponential in the volume. You can't make a list and pick one. You need some algorithm to choose that. And he came up with the first efficient algorithm, but this algorithm has a great theoretical consequence.
So,
for example, you start with any two points on your graph. Okay, so you have your graph. Start with any two points. Start from this, from point, let's call that A and call that B. Start from point B and do loop erased random walk until you hit A. Okay? This is the first. This is the first piece of the tree. Now pick any other point, any which way you want it. Okay? Do loop erased random walk and stop when you hit what you already have. Okay? Pick a fourth point, D. And a fifth point, E. And so on. Okay? You get a tree. It turns out that no matter which algorithm you use for picking these points, you always get a tree which is distributed uniformly, a spanning tree which is distributed uniformly among all trees. Okay, is the statement clear? You can pick your vertices uniformly. You can decide that you can pick your vertices having distance 1 from what you already have. It doesn't matter because you have some probability to escape. You can prefix an order any way you want. Yeah, and this makes it possible by that if you want to understand subtrees of uniform spanning tree, you can understand them if you understand loop-based random walk. It also has lots of implications for loop-based random walk. Okay.
just some mathematical game, or it originates from some typical...
Yeah, I'm getting to that. Yeah, I'm getting to that. Okay, so... So here's what I want to talk about, is the connection to the POTS model. Okay? So... So let me remind you what is the FK representation, the Fortuyn Castellan representation.
Sorry, wait,
yes. Yes.
So the advantage of the sovereign
is that machines are used to work themselves? Yes, because it just, you have a very... Yeah, algorithmically it's very easy. And this is the advantage of this as an algorithm. But also, okay, here's for example one consequence. Okay, take three points. A, B, C. Okay, take loop erased random walk from A to B. Take loop erased random walk from C to what you have. This thing does, has the same distribution if you started with A, C, and B. Rather than with, I mean, if you replace the role of B and C, so this gives you some kind of extra symmetries for loop erased random walk. So the algorithm is good for two things: A, for as a quick algorithm to choose a uniform spanning tree so you can simulate, and B, it gives you extra symmetries for loop erased random walk that you can use to prove things.
Yeah, a remark here is that if you want to simulate a path.
Yeah. Okay. So let me remind you, what is the FK representation of the POTS model? Okay. So you take some. Again, this still is true for any graph. Yes, you take any graph, and for any configuration of open and closed edges, you give the following weight. So P, this is one part. Let me copy that actually. So yeah, so P, this is your first parameter to the power of the number of the open edges. Okay, 1 minus P. To the power number of the closed edges. And finally, Q, this is your second parameter. This is the same parameter as the number of colors in the POTS model, to the number of open components. So you just count how many components there are, and you take Q to this power. And since these things don't sum up to one, you normalize. Okay? And this is a measure on the space of all configurations of open and closed edges. And you can see that if you take Q equal to 1, you get simply independent percolation. If you take Q being an integer bigger than 1, say 2 or 3, this is, well, very strongly related to 2. Well, Q equal to 2 to the... Yes.
You just mentioned open and closed edges, so what does this mean?
Well,
yeah, sorry. Random probability theory, which likes to call these open and closed.
You can also call them black and white, or blue and yellow.
But they're not the colors.
What?
If you think you call them colors, they're not the colors.
No, yeah, no, that's why I call them open and closed. There are somehow the edges, and open is somehow between two vertices of the same color in the POTS model, and closed is, can be between. Okay. Anyway, so this is immediate, and for Q equal to 2, this is easing model, Q equal to 3, 4, and so on, this is the POTS model. I won't talk exactly about the relation, how you get to the usual representation, but what I do want you to note is that if you take both parameters to 0, this way, so you take both parameters to 0, but P faster than Q, this converges exactly to the uniform spanning tree. Okay? let's see why this is true. The fact that P converges goes to zero. But the limit converges to that. The converges. No. Just converges to zero. You don't have to specify a thing. Let's see why. Well, I can look at my notes, but there are a certain.
The other way, if P goes to zero and P goes to zero two, but
let's check it out. I mean, you don't have to. let's do the calculation. The fact that.
What you can say is both those zero and their ratio also goes
to. Yes. Yes, exactly.
How fast does it matter?
No, it doesn't matter. So the fact that P goes to zero means that any edge that closes a circle, a loop, is, you know, has a, gives you a penalty of P. So the fact that P goes to zero is enough to ensure that the model would only would be a forest. Not necessarily a tree, but it would be a forest. Now, to get a tree, you need that the, what happens now when you connect two trees in your forest? You get a penalty of P for the connection, but you earn a penalty of Q because. So yes, so you're right. So the other way around. yeah. So when you have to get that the you earn a Q over P by connecting two trees. Okay. So this way. And therefore, when you take the limit, every edge that connects, you know, having two components, it just you get a penalty, and therefore doesn't happen. Okay, so this is some version of the POTS model, but there's something interesting going on that I don't know of a good explanation of that. These parameters are not critical. Okay, just take my word for that. When you take, in order to have a critical model, you need to P and Q to be of the same order. Okay, but it turns out, and this is, well, I would say an experimental fact, that the uniform spanning tree or loopless automorph behave like a critical POTS model. And in which sense? So you have.
All Qs, zeros.
Yeah.
And then
it's
supposed to
numbers. Yeah.
But you know,
yeah. Yeah. So I don't have a good explanation for that. But the fact is that it you know behaves like a critical model. So in what sense? First of all, you have an upper critical dimension, which is 4. And above the upper critical dimension, you have exactly Gaussian behavior. So loopless automorphism looks like a Brownian motion. At the critical dimension itself, you have logarithmic corrections. Again, as you would expect, in two dimensions, you have conformal invariants, and you have nice rational exponents. In short, everything that you would want to have for a critical POTS model, right? So, and this is where, you know, maybe the lecture should have started at this point. Why does it behave like a critical POTS model? There is not, I don't have an explanation that is completely satisfactory, okay?
I actually have an explanation if
you want. Okay, just a minute, but there was a question before. Yes.
This analogy you say exists in higher dimension because I can see why four should be three higher dimension for a loop array and one
number. But you know, this the connection is just, you know, true in any graph. So yes. Other questions? Okay, so.
So I just actually, I mean, I have a student working on this cube, Prox model.
Ah, the same as the simulation that Salas and Sokol did.
The point is that I first, I asked him to do the problem on the complete graph.
Okay.
And it turns out that the whole supercritical phase of the model is critical.
Yes, I know that.
The critical behavior.
Yes, I think so. There's a long paper of Salas and Sokol, and who was the third guy? Don't remember. They did of simulations that also, they indicate the same thing. Yeah.
So that may be where your critical.
Yes. Okay. That is some amount, some kind of. Yeah.
Maybe you're American,
more
than I'm sure. What is the critical view of the one plus group? Yes.
Oh, okay.
So the problem is the mystery. I'm sorry, but then I don't understand what your comment was, because P is going to 0 and Q is going to 0.
Yes, but not linearly.
I think it's square root of q divided by 1 plus square root of q plus the critical
square root of q divided by 1 plus square root of q.
No, there has to be some mismatch of
That's the sound dual point.
No, it should be.
The point that this
immigration. Yeah, I know what you mean, but no, but somehow this is not the. No, this is just not the critical value. The critical value is linear, it's not square root. The square root is something else. I'm not sure. I know what you mean. But it's not the critical value in the usual sense.
You cannot really define critical value in the usual sense. You know, so I know, how do you define critical value in the usual sense?
Well, for percolating.
How do you know that there's percolation at all? And just you take the limit when t is equal to q and both of them equal to 0, so you get the q equals 0 Prox model. And according to, if you believe that the critical point is like q, then you should have sort of some small value of the
no, I'm saying something different. Pick some positive q, okay? And now ask, here there is no problem, right? You can just. You don't need FKG to define the criticality, right? And then you just from some kind of Pell's argument, you get that the critical P has to be linear in Q.
How do you know that's percolation at all?
As I said, there's some Pell's argument show you that there is percolation for P sufficiently large, and there's no percolation for P sufficiently small. And the ratio is linear in Q. Just Bell's argument. Okay. So to wrap up this, how similar it is to critical Prox model. So we have here some kind of toy model. So there is a certain. I mean, I feel compelled to somehow explain why it is useful to think about this toy model. And the ultimate test for a toy model is that techniques developed for the toy models are useful for the real problems, right? And loop-rest random walk passes this test because SLE was invented to analyze loop-rest random walk. So I think it's worthwhile to do it. And here's our first squint. Loop-rest random walk is currently, SLE is great and we all love it, but we do want to say something about three dimensions, right? We have some kind of special relation to this. And loop-rest random walk is the only process for which something is known in three dimensions. So not much maybe right now, but something. So So I think it's worth understanding this model. Okay, so anything? Let me give you a very, very short proof of the upper critical dimensions, just so that you'll see how useful it is to take this spots model and represent it as a random walk. Okay? Okay. So how do you explain that? So let's assume we have more than five dimensions or more. Okay? In five dimensions or more, two random walks have positive probability not to intersect. This is very easy to see, right? Because at time t, the probability that at time t and s they are at the same point is just s2 minus d over 2. You sum over that, so let's call it minimum of t2 minus t. Okay? You sum over s, you sum over t, you see that the sum is finite. Okay, what does that mean? Now examine one random walk, pick some point in time n, and ask what is the probability that r of 0n intersection r of n plus 1 infinity is empty. This is the same problem, right? You just reverse this part and you get the same problem. So the probability for this is bigger than some constant, independent of n. But every point for which this condition is satisfied must be in the loop erased random walk, right? In order to be erased, you have to complete a loop around it. And if this piece and this piece do not intersect, then there is no loop, right? This means that the expected number, the expected size of the loop erasure of the first endpoint
is linear,
because for every n you have positive probability. So the loop erasure of random walk is some kind of a dense subset with the same number of points. So the scaling limit is Brownian motion. Is this clear? Yes.
And t greater than 4.
Yes. But what happens in t greater than 4, then you get some log.
No, that 4 is log, but I guess it doesn't have to be greater or equal to 5.
Yes. It's strictly greater than 4. Loop erased random walk, but in loop erased random walk, these logarithmic corrections, mysterious logarithmic corrections have actually been proved. Okay, so you can actually calculate the log factor and everything that you would want to have, which is simply not done, at least mathematically, in any other model, right? So, and again, just look at this proof. It's trivial. Just think how difficult it is to do race expansion for self-avoiding walk. This is like 30 pages of calculations. There's nothing here. Okay? So this example was meant to convince you that this model is really much easier than other POTS model. Okay? Okay? Okay, so I think... Okay, the next thing I want to talk about is the connection to SLE, but that's quite long. So maybe we should make a 5 minutes break, and so people who had enough loop erased random walk can kind of vanish. And because after that, I'm going to start with connection to SLE. So let me just warn you what's coming. Okay. So we're going to have a short break now, and after that, we're going to explain what is a stochastic Levner evolution and sketch a proof that loop erased random walk in two dimensions converges to SLE2. Okay.
Before people start this,
Okay, good. We have some great results. Okay, so let's start with stochastic Lebesgue evolution. I assume you are going to have a nice introduction to that at some point later, but I also assume that this is going to be for what is known as chordal SLE. Well, here what we need is a different flavor, which is called radial SLE. So this is for me sufficient.
Sufficient excuse to
give you a few more details about what is SLE, even though you are going to probably have a dedicated talk for that. Okay, so what is SLE? SLE is well, okay, so most generally, SLE is a way to represent the scaling limit of critical two-dimensional systems by some kind of stochastic differential equation with some parameters, kappa, with one parameter. And the parameter is completely crucial in the sense that it fixes all the universality class and everything that you want to know, you can calculate it once you know the value of kappa. This is one parameter which you need to know. Okay? So, Let me start maybe in a slightly formal way. So first of all, what does SLE stand for? So SLE stands for stochastic Lebesgue evolution. Okay. And let me start by describing to you what is Lebesgue evolution. This is a classical topic in conformal analysis from the 20s. Okay, so what is Lebesgue evolution? So you have some domain. This is our domain. And you have some path from the boundary of the domain not touching zero. Suppose zero is inside your domain and the path does not touch zero. In this case, there exists a unique conformal map with the following properties. The domain is mapped into the unit circle. This is the unit circle. Zero is mapped into zero. Okay?
So.
And the derivative at zero is positive, right? The Riemann mapping theorem says that a conformal map of two domains is fixed up to three parameters, and these are the three parameters that we need: two parameters here and one parameter here. So bigger than zero is actually a shorthand for real and bigger. Okay. So far this is just Riemann theorem. Now, let gamma t be just the part of gamma from time zero to time t. Okay? And let's take gt, the same map, but from the domain dt, which is just the slit domain, the domain from which you removed this piece. So, dt is just the domain minus gamma from 0 to t. And you define gt in the same way. Okay? Now, gt prime at 0 is increasing. This is just from the Schwarz lemma. So you can reparameterize the path so that it gets any function that you want to have, and we will work with this parameterization. Okay? Then, and this is the theorem that is due to Levner. Okay? Then, G satisfies the differential equation, and let me write it down. Where W of T is just the image of the very tip. Okay, so let me put it slightly differently. Okay, Levner evolution gives you a two-directional connection between paths, gamma, and generating functions, W. To get from gamma to W, what you do, what I just described, you look at these conformal maps, you look at where the conformal maps take the tip to, and this is W. Now you want to go back. How you go back, and you of course reparameter. Now you want to go back. How you go back? You have here a differential equation. You can solve it for any z. This depends on both t and g depends on both t and z, but that only depends on the parameter t. Yes.
Can you write the right hand side more clearly? Is that an exponent?
Well, this is the derivative.
I can't read what you wrote on the right hand side of the equation.
Okay, so no, it's not an exponent. G times this fraction. G plus W, G minus W. Okay? So this is a differential equation which you can solve. Actually, for every Z, this is an ODE. This is not a PDE, even though there are two parameters, because for every value of Z, the evolution is independent. Right? So the derivative of g of z with respect to t is some function of g and w. So basically for any point in your domain, there is a differential equation you can solve. After some time, there is a singularity here, so you cannot solve for all time. Okay, and you define gamma of t as all points where the solution does not exist up to time t. So gamma of 0 t, so the piece of the path between 0 and t is equal to all z's such that no solution up to time t. Okay, so this is the theorem of Levner that I will not prove. But there is a point to note here, and it's this: if you start with a path, you get some generating function. But if you start from some generating function, there is nothing, no obvious reason why you should get back, but you should get the path. So I mean, if W comes from gamma, you'd get gamma back, but. If you just start from an arbitrary function, then you get an arbitrary growing family of compacts, of closed sets, but not necessarily a path. And in fact, this is a very important phenomenon, that this is not necessarily a simple path. Okay? Is this clear, more or less? Yeah, questions, yeah.
W is continuous if you find
rule start.
Yes,
that's true.
You can start with the same
function,
of course, then you definitely
W. Yes, that's true. And actually, that's also interesting, starting with this continuous function. But for what we are going to do, W is going to be continuous. Yes. Okay, so stare at this for a few. Thank you. seconds. Before we throw the S in. Okay, so what is stochastic Lerner evolution? Stochastic Lerner evolution is about starting with W equal to Brownian motion. So what do I mean exactly? You take one dimensional Brownian motion, you multiply it by our mystery parameter, you will have to take my world from it. That even though this is just a multiplicative parameter, it makes a whole world of difference. And then you map it to the circle, right? W has to be a function on the boundary of the circle. And you ask, what gamma do you get from solving Lerner's evolution? And I think, which order should I take that? So, by the way, just because I already said these terms, this is called radial because this is a process from zero to the boundary. The other flavor is between two points on the boundary. But other than that, and you get a slightly different differential equation, but other than that, most things are the same. Okay, so why should anyone want to put Brownian motion into this differential equation? You have to have some reason to do that.
So let me first
convince you that the really delicate problem about this is the 2. Whereas the fact that it converges to SL, that the limit should be SLE, is easy. Okay, so how do we do that? Okay, so again, is it clear what I'm trying to do? Now we are not starting yet on the 2. We are just showing that you would expect under some assumptions that the limit would be SLE. So, why is this true? Let's assume, this is actually a theorem nowadays, but let's assume, but for the sake of introduction, we can just assume that. So let's assume that Lucas random walk is conformal invariance. I already claimed that at some point, but let me just write it explicitly. So if you have some mapping G from some domain to the circle, to any other domain, and then loop erased random walk on, well, you need to discretize the domain, right? This is a discrete process. So you take the domain, intersect it with a very fine mesh, okay? And I have to tell you which point it starts from. So let's call it just 0, okay? The starting point has the same distribution as Lucas, and you apply G to all that, has the same distribution as Lucas random walk on a discretization of Z when you take epsilon to 0. Okay, so this is the completely standard interpretation of conformal invariance for any discrete process. You assume that as the mesh goes becomes finer and finer, when you map the process from one domain, you get the same process in the other. Okay, so let's believe that. Okay, is this clear? What I mean by conformal invariance? Okay, good. Now let's talk about the conformal Markov property, or maybe I should call it the process Markov property. This is a slightly tricky it's a bit annoying that this property is completely trivial for percolation and easing and any other model that you would want, and for loop rest on the walk of all models, this requires something. But let's explain what I mean by the process Markov property. So I mean the following. Suppose you have some domain, D, and some short path here, gamma. And again, zero here in the domain. And you look at loop erased random walk on the domain, starting from zero on your domain, and you condition that its tail is equal to gamma. Okay, so what do I do here? Okay, let me write complete the formulation. Then this has exactly the same distribution as loop erased random walk on the slit domain. Okay? And, well, this line here should be here, conditioned on just ending at gamma of t. At the end, at the tip. So let me just explain this. What I mean here again. On the left side, what do? I start random walk from zero, stop it when it hits the boundary, calculate the loop erased random walk, check if the end is similar to gamma. Well, most likely it won't be, so I throw it away and try again, and again, and again. The probability is very small, but it will happen at some point. This is what I have on the left side. Okay? A loop erased random walk conditioned that the last part is exactly gamma. On the right hand side, what do? I do the same process, but I stop the random walk when it hits the domain or gamma. So I stop it a bit earlier. Okay? And even before loop erasing, I just check that it hit to the point. So I'm doing a much somehow lighter conditioning. I'm just conditioning on the end point. Okay? If it hits here or here, I throw it away. But when it first hits here, I loop erase, and you know, this is my right hand side. Yeah, but now I'm talking just about I didn't take any limits. So just yeah, this is still complete. Actually, you can do it for any graph. What I'm doing now. Okay, so I'm not taking epsilon to zero at this point. Okay, is the claim clear? So, how do you show that? Well, the only delicate point is that you need the symmetry of loop erased random walk, which comes from the interpretation as a path in the UST. Other than that, there is not much to prove, and I don't really want to explain why, but you have to somehow understand that you have to think about, not about loop erased random walk from zero to the boundary, but from the boundary to zero. So take random walk that starts at the cold point of the boundary and loop erase that, and understand that you know, that when you condition on gamma, it's just the same as continuing from gamma, roughly. And let me leave that without any details. This is something okay, let me put it like that, anyone can prove at home with a bit of effort. It's extremely important, but it's not difficult. Okay? These two properties, one with that we assumed, and the second one, which we kind of explained, or at least I promised that you could do it yourself, are enough to show that the limit is SLE. This is the most interesting thing. And if you think, for example, about percolation or easing model or pots, you know, then for these models, the process Markov property is just trivial. You know, just think about it home and you will understand that there is nothing just to show. It's much easier than even this one, which is not difficult. So if you believe conformal invariance, you would know that you must have some SLE kappa. But, you know, what is the value of kappa is tricky. So let me explain why these two properties imply SLE. Okay, so how do I explain that? Let's suppose we have some domain and we are looking at Lupillay standard walk, and we want to see we want to understand the generating function, the W, that would that corresponds to this random process. So you have a random path, you do this process, you get the random generating functions. What function, what can we say about this? So let's stop this process at this point. Okay, so we stop it at a time, I don't know what, t, and then you have some w of t. And now, property 2, this bit has the same distribution as a Lupillay random walk on the slit domain. By property 1, you can map the slit domain to a different domain. So let's map the slit domain just to your original. Let's do it even on a circle, okay? I shouldn't have done it on a general domain. Let's do it on a circle. Okay, so a circle, and you map it again to a circle. You take G, T, it maps this point with all the conditions that we had. What do you get? You get the same thing, but starting now from the same W. You get the same process starting from the new W. So this means that this random W has independent increments. Okay? It's clear this is the most important point. Because of these two properties, the random W has independent increments. And then continuous, and that means it's motion. Independent and identically distributed increments. Is this clear? Okay. So this part of the argument was extremely generic, but we want two. Because as I said, well, there's so much you can get from generic arguments, right? Since we know that the scaling limit of the Lupillay random walk and percolation and easing and all these models are all different, so by generic argument you can't, you know, calculate anything. So you need to calculate the kappa. Okay. Okay, and this is the... This is the tricky part. Okay, so in general, let me start by talking in meaningless generality. How do you guess the kappa for any process? So there are two steps. First of all, you have to find some kind of measurable on which you can say something by examining the process. On which you can say maybe that it's constant, maybe it's driftless. This is actually what is most popular actually for percolation. They find some measurable which is driftless from the properties of the form. This follows the properties of the discrete process. Okay? And second, you use Itô calculus. There's a hat here, right, on the Itô. So you use Itô calculus to get some kind of equation from the information that you gathered in step one. So this is the general framework for walking, and
so this durable, this measurable,
yeah,
should exist in both settings, the discrete and continuous.
Yes, 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 exactly. Yes.
It's like crossing probabilities.
Yes, crossing probabilities. Yeah, that's exactly what they use in percolation. They use the. Okay. One of the things that you can use in percolation is crossing probability. So unfortunately, our measurable is a little ugly, but I hope we'll all survive it. So let me introduce the measurable. But now, the good news though is that we are not going to see Itô calculus in this proof. Okay, we're going to see maybe the tail or the horns, but not the Itô calculus itself. Because everything is discrete here, the process is discrete, and we are not going to take a limit. So that's the good news, I guess. The only good news about the calculation that I'm going to do. Okay, so lambda j, what is our measurable? So here's our domain again. And here are the last j steps of the Lucas random walk. Here's our point zero. Okay. Here's another auxiliary point v. Okay. And lambda j is the hitting probability the ratio of the hitting probability. Okay, so let me explain the notation. First of all, okay, gamma of j is just the last point, okay, so this is gamma of j. Dj is just what you expect, just the domain minus the path. H is the hitting probability. What do I mean by that? So H of V gamma of J just means start a random walk at V, stop it when it hits the boundary of the domain Dj, so the boundary or the slit. What is the probability that it hits gamma J? Okay, and you take the ratio of these from these two points. And the first, and our first goal is to be able, from properties of loop erased random walk, to say something about lambda j. Specifically, we are going to show that it's kind of constant. Is this more or less clear?
Sorry, constant as a function of v?
As a function of j.
So you're saying the stopping
is, yeah,
the gamma of j is not on the boundary of t.
No, on the boundary of dj.
Yeah.
Here also, dj is also. Just dj, both of them should be. Okay, so
it's a function of v, right?
It's a function of v and j. And j, right? And I'm actually more interested in how it depends on j. I want to show that it's constant in j. J is not exactly the time. It's kind of the time, but it's really, it's not, we didn't normalize, right? You remember, for SLE, we need to normalize and so on. So this is the only reason why I write j instead of t. Yes.
So if we didn't have loop erasure, this would simply be the ratio of Green's functions, or the boundary
of the formal. Anyway, this is the ratio of the Green's function. But no, this is the usual Green's function. There's nothing here. There's nothing then hidden.
Because we know conformal invariance, it's the usual Green's function. Is that
yeah? Yeah. This is the.
This one is Green's function. what do they have to do with the heat
assumption? But this is just the heating. Look, okay, let me put it like that. First of all, the endpoint of loop-erased Landau-Mercalli for Landau-Mercalli has the same distribution. Okay? This is the same, right?
Sir, what's the same? What do you think?
This is not so relevant, actually, but I should have said probably at some point that what is the endpoint of the loop-erased Landau-Mercalli is the same as the endpoint of the Landau-Mercalli, right? The loop eraser cannot change the ending point. Okay, so it's the same. But what I meant when I wrote this formula is the Green's function for Landau-Mercalli. The discrete Green's, the usual, heating probability, it's not really important, for the usual Landau-Mercalli. The properties of loop erasure will come when we see how lambda j changes when as function of j. This is when it will happen, but not right now, they are still, in the background. Okay, good. So, okay, before I start, let me give you somehow the natural somehow scale of everything. This little tip. Think about this as small, okay? The size here would be, I denote the size of this by delta, okay? Now, everything that I need to check how it changes, I need to understand how it changes with respect to delta. So, for example, before, just from completely general consideration, I claim that lambda at the end, is a priori of order delta. Okay, this has nothing to do with the fact that it's loop-erased Landau-Mercalli. Any small set of size delta, this would follow. And you want to understand why this is true. I see you do. okay, so let me explain what this is. So this is n. Okay, so this is what I denoted previously by j. So lambda. So I use j, but I really want m. Okay, so let's call it lambda of m. Okay, so this is just what I wrote here, and this is the same value, but just without this, just for at the starting point. Okay, and actually I meant throughout the process it doesn't change by more than delta. Okay, and this is somehow kind of this is not a very deep fact, but this is just, h changes a lot because h depends on somehow the local structure near the tip, but the ratio doesn't see this local structure, and from this it follows it. Okay, imagine we are talking about Brownian motion, okay? So you can conformally map it, and then this is basically saying that if you look at the hitting probabilities at two points which are of distance delta, then the ratio between these two points is very close. Why? The ratio is just the derivative of the Poisson kernel, and the Poisson kernel has a bounded... In this good setting, this is kind of obvious. Okay, just the ratio of the densities of the harmonic measure. Okay? Okay, so this is one fact, and the other fact is that let's now compare the Green's function. Let me just say at which point. So, first of all, the Green's function, for any j, this is about approximately 1. This is approximately a constant. Okay? Does anyone want to see the definition of the Green's function in this case? The Green's function is just the expected number of visits to V when you start from 0. And this is a constant. This is easy to show. The probability of hitting V is 1 over log R. And then you have log R visits. And so the expected is about a constant. Okay? Okay. Delta is the size of this piece with respect to your domain. So if your domain is of size 1, this is a small piece of just say the bounding, the radius of this piece. Okay? The diameter of this piece.
Because again, with the number of steps, we'll only be in the fractal dimension of this thing. So
yes, but we don't know the fractal dimension yet. But yes.
Some power of that, which you don't know.
I know. I want. Yeah. Well. Yes. Well. Yes. You can. Yes. That's true. But actually, delta would be of m is some power of r, our scaling, and delta is somehow.
Let's call length of step epsilon. It's a small mesh.
Yeah. Okay. So let's call the mesh epsilon. So if you call the mesh epsilon, then m.
Yeah.
Is epsilon to power minus some unknown exponent multiplied by delta, and delta is you should think about delta as being significant. For example, it could be 1 over log epsilon, or the delta is will take m to epsilon to 0 while fixing delta. So delta you can think about it as quite large with respect to the mesh, but smaller than the scale of the domain. Okay. Okay, and the second fact that we need to understand is that this difference, first of all, this distance is positive, and it's smaller than a constant delta to the square. Why is this? So, what is the difference between these two Green's function? So. In order to have a... Okay, so you want to compare the Green function in two domains, right? These two indices change for the Green's function only the domain. Okay, so let's couple, for example, the two random walks. In order for this to be different, you have to hit here and then go back. Probability to hit here is delta. Probability to go back is delta. So this this difference is of order of this delta square. Is this clear? Now, please ask questions. You know, my purpose is that you know you'll understand something. Okay. Okay, nobody complains. I can assume everything is fine. Yeah, it is. But right now, I don't know anything about the Lebesgue revolution. Right now, I'm showing.
I'm.
Yes, yes, and then that would be true. But right now, I'm just showing you that this piece has everything to do with the discrete process and nothing to do with Lebesgue revolution. This part has everything to do with the Lebesgue revolution but nothing to do with the discrete process. That's like the nice, there's a very important conceptual division, and here's another squint. This piece kind of works in three dimensions also. It's this piece that has no analog. Okay? Okay. And okay. So far we haven't, but.
Sorry, just to get. So you're adding that you want to prove that couple is two points.
Exactly. Yeah.
This
yes. Yeah. And so far, both these estimates did not use the structure of this small piece. Okay. Now I'm going to use it. Okay. So here is now comes the tool action. Okay. Let's call HJ the following. We've reached the most important piece. Okay, so you have your random walk that generates loopy rest random walk. You can ask how many times it hits V. But now, let's the random walk, if this is the end of the loop-erased random walk, let's assume these are the two vertices at time j and j minus 1, at not time, but at, you know, length of loop-erased random walk j and j minus 1. So how the, let's examine just the piece of the random walk between your first visit here and your first visit here. Okay? Okay. Let's define hj to be the number of visits to v. Let's reinstate it. Between these two times. Okay, so nj is the time where the generating random walk first hit this vertex, which we kind of foresee that it will be in the tail of the loop-erased random walk. And this is nj minus 1. The random walk does some kind of dance between these two points. Okay? And we want to estimate the probability or the event that it actually went all the way to v before coming back. This, of course, has a rather small probability for every j, but you know, when you sum, you'll get all kinds of interesting things. Okay. Let's start by doing sum from j to infinity of h, well, call it k. Don't really mean infinity here, I mean the length of the path. Okay, so that's okay. And you know, condition on the gamma. And let's calculate the expectation of that. Okay? What is this sum? This is just the total number of times we visited V before hitting this point, right? Because I'm just summing on over all j, so just the total number of times usual random walk, right? This is just a fact about random walk. Okay?
So all of the work happens in the complement of the path of the change.
Yes. Yes. This is the conditioning thing.
Scale the walk
on the time frame. Yeah, to understand that, you should examine a random walk which is conditioned to hit at this point. This expectation is just the expectation.
So the infinity is the hitting time of gamma j minus 1.
The infinity is just the length of the total path. So yeah, something like that. Yeah. Okay, so is it clear that now we have a question about random walk? Again, let's understand that, this point. Okay? We are summing the number of visits to V between all these small pieces of the random walk that generates the loop-erased random walk. So, what is this sum? It's just the number of visits to V of the entire random walk. Okay? So what you have here? A random walk. Condition to hit this point, how many times it visits V. And now it's quite easy to... And once you have this representation, easy to see that this is G0 V multiplied by, well, the probability when you start from V to end at gamma of J in the domain DJ, because, right, we are conditioning on ending here, right? But because we start, this is the expected, but we have to divide by H of 0, gamma of J. Again, all of this is just the conditioning. This multiplication and this division is just the conditioning on the endpoint. So this is just
the big H.
Yeah. Sorry. These are the big H's, of course. Okay. As I said, this is. We are at the heart of darkness here. This is the core of the calculation. The DJ. I see that you'll have to correct me again, probably. Okay, so this is just one. So this is one calculation, and this means that the expected sum from 0 to m of Hj is just what you get, g0 lambda 0 minus, well, expectation of that, of course. So this is not, these are all random, gm lambda. Okay, I just subtract two of those. Okay, so far so good. Now let's calculate this in a different way. Okay, so let's examine, as I promised, Okay, so let's examine now one HJ. And again, for simplicity, let me condition on the path. Okay, that we now examine the expectation. So I see these pictures become a bit crowded. So, excuse me. So.
So you perform the offsets that are made, expectations
of the conditions? Of everything, yeah. Well, yes. But there's no condition anymore. There's expectation of everything. Okay. So, what do you need? How did we what do you need in order for the number of in order to visit V? You have to basically get to V from here. So let's okay, and then you know, then the number of visits. So this element is just G J from gamma J to V, right? But then you have to get back. So there's a second element, which is H J from V to gamma J. So far, nothing particular, nothing spectacular. Okay? Is this clear? Have a look at that. Remember, this walk has to get back to this point, right? So the second factor is the hitting probability.
It has to get back without ever hitting D again.
This is somehow... No, the whole issue of hitting V again is here. Anyway, not hit... You have to do the decomposition to justify this. You're right. Yeah, you have to decompose.
You used to just wait for the first visit from gamma J to B. Right. You should not count the H of J right there. Is not. The event should not cause any more visits to B, otherwise.
I think there's a mistake here. Let's see. This looks... No, actually, I think it's okay.
Let me ask you about the circles.
Yeah.
What was in the Schramm's original paper?
Okay.
What was the statement there?
No, you definitely deserve an answer to that. Let me just finish the calculation because we are quite close to the end, and then I'll ask. because this is this history is interesting. So let's believe that for a moment. Okay, I think I have to think if this is an issue or not. Okay. Now, okay, I just here instead of this, I can write hj 0 lambda of j multiplied by lambda j. Now examine these two factors together, right? So now I somehow moved this piece to this piece, okay? This is again for the same reason that we had before. This is exactly gj minus gj minus 1. Right? Because now what we have the probability from what is this difference? This is just the probability when you start from 0 to get to vj and then to go back to v. But this is exactly what we have here. Right? The probability from 0 to gamma j and then the expected number of visits after that. Okay? And now when you sum, you get a second equality. Now remember though what we said, that all lambdas are equal up to an error of delta. And you get, and remember this too, you get, no, I meant lambda n. Yeah, I'm using here, I'm using this fact. And, okay, I'm using this fact. Plus, you take the O delta, because this is delta squared, you take it out, you get O delta to the 3, which is, in our setting, the negligible quantity. Okay? Now compare these, you see that drop this, and this is what we want them to show. Delta to the 3 is our negligible quantity. And this is everything I wanted to say about this part one, number one. Okay, so let's relax a bit.
This is really
the analog. Yes. This was my so I know this calculation is tricky, so let's relax a bit. What we have? We started with estimates on the lambdas and the g, which had nothing to do with the structure, with the fact that this is Luperrest random walk. They were just true for any set of sizes of diameter delta. Then we did all kinds of calculations with all kinds of rather delicate calculations with the Green's function, which this time utilized the fact that this is Luperrest random walk in order to somehow, okay, well, you saw that, I won't repeat. To get a quality which finally translated to showing that lambda m minus lambda 0 is not just delta, what you get for generically, but delta to the third, which is exactly what I meant when I said that the properties of the discrete process give you that a certain measurable is constant. And I know this calculation is not so clear. I apologize. but all Other proofs of using SLE have somehow first part is simpler and second part is more complicated.
So the specifics of Looper is random walk.
Mm-hmm.
Only in the fact that it somehow came from random walk.
Yes.
Whatever you use in the calculations were all parts are doing random walk.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
The Looper was used to take single files.
Yes, yes. Yes.
Actually following up on that comment, I'm wondering, at the beginning of your talk, you showed a where you stated that there's a symmetry, it didn't matter which way you ordered
the
path.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Suppose you did something symmetrical, that is, you made the entire path,
mm-hmm.
and then you took uniform probability on all the simple loops which were contained in the path.
Okay.
Does that give you the same distribution?
I don't see any reason why it should. Interesting. So let's see. Let's see. So you have. How do you exactly define HJ in this case? If you don't have like a J, so you can say. Yeah, that's also. Yeah, it's interesting. I you know that Lola gave a talk in. Okay, that was just. okay. Anyway, so let's go back to Ilya's questions about the history, because that's much more fun than all these calculations. So so what was in Schramm's original paper, and what was in the second paper with Lola and Werner. So in his original paper, he showed the argument that I sketched before, that just conformal Markov, the process Markov property, or whatever I called it, okay, for loop rational walk, which is not difficult. He assumed conformal invariance, so that proof was, as a proof go, it was incomplete. And deduced from that SLE kappa, using exactly the same argument that I sketched, okay, that, these two properties just imply that this is SLE. And then he tried to calculate to show that kappa is equal to 2.
That's some idea why it should be 2.
Yes, so I'm getting to that. So what was it? So the idea? So he used previous results, which I didn't talk to about at all, which are due to Kenyon. So Kenyon approached this whole problem from a completely different point of view. What he did was, well, he went to the U.S. Steel presentation. Then he there are all kinds of he used all kinds of Puffian counting formulas for. He translated it to a Dymo problem. Then he used all kinds of Puffian counting formulas, and he finally was able to show that the how the winding number of Lupirest random walk behaves. Okay. And as somehow this shows, once you have any kind of measurable that you can calculate, the kappa. And this is what Schramm did. He calculated the connection between the winding number and kappa and showed that kappa must be 2 in order for this to match Kenyon's result. The proof that I sketched here is the proof from the second paper. It no longer uses Kenyon's result at all. If I'd go with second part, which I probably won't, because I see I've exhausted you completely with the first part. So if I were to go through with second part, I you would just get that kappa is equal to 2. So you just plug, so very roughly what you do, really just in a few lines, you just take the. You have this magical quantity, which we showed it's constant, kind of constant anyway, okay? You now you want to see how T, the capacity, and the change in log W behave. Just take this differential equation. You plug it back. You write an explicit. You write lambda j in these terms, and you get some kind of expression multiplied by the expectation of the change in your b. This is somehow the first order, and the second order term, which is not completely relevant, plus the expectation of delta b squared minus 2 delta t. And this should be zero, right? Because this is the change in lambda j. So this should be, well, the zero, right? Of delta to the third, but zero.
Kappa.
Yes. I meant. Okay, let's call it L. Let's call it L rather than B. I didn't mean the Brownian motion. I mean just the logarithm of W. L is the logarithm of W. And this means immediately. This means that there is no drift. This means that the variance is twice the time. So kappa is 2. Okay, so this is somehow the second part that it actually is not so, it's shorter than this. But once you have that, you just calculate. Okay, so, and this is what...
One is that these expressions depend on V, and you get them correct. One is independent
equation. Yeah, you take two V's, yeah, or three V's, or whatever. And this is the whole argument.
But this whole thing was in the lower number.
Yes.
So what you would potentially might talk about is your contribution on
the joint. So my contribution, look, what I proved is that in three dimensions you have a scaling limit. So the proof is in probability terms, that would be
let's make sure that what we've done so far is not your results.
No, these are not my results. So my result is that in three dimensions the scaling limit exists. Okay? And this is in probability terms kind of like putting the cart before the horses, right? Because what everybody else does is to first of all derive some properties of the continuum process, and then show that the scaling limit is the continuum process. So here, in three dimensions, what you have a proof that the scaling limit exists, okay? But you don't know how to calculate anything for this continuum process. So kind of why I said that the only musing I had, the musings in the title are the fact that this works in three dimensions. Okay? So part one kind of works in three dimensions.
In this fashion, you just speak in the same terms of these functions.
Yes.
What would be a glitch?
No, this works. This whole argument works. So the question is, okay, so you probably...
Why not 4 dimensions? Why not 5 dimensions?
Because you can't, you don't have to...
But what do you do? Okay, so you don't...
No, we don't talk about the second step, just the first step.
Yeah, so yeah, I guess it works in all dimensions. I mean, I didn't verify this, but as you can see for yourself, there's nothing specifically two dimensions. And I actually kind of arranged it to be even less specifically two dimension. Okay? There is nothing specifically two dimension in this argument. This argument will... What?
So what about when you... here it's on four transfers, when you rescale it, that kind of dimension was on four.
But I don't sum on the dimensions, right? Delta... the cube here is somehow a discrete analog of the fact that in Itô calculus you need two derivatives, and the third derivative you can throw away, and this is not third dimension related. Okay? And so there are some, of course there are things which are dimension related in this calculation. I'm not saying it's completely dimension clear, but what I'm saying is that probably you can show something similar in the three-dimensional case. You can show, find some measurable, maybe not exactly this, but something similar, that would be constant. Okay, maybe even this itself, I didn't check. But then what?
It's not even clear that one quantity like that will characterize the...
Yes, of course. Of course, it's not clear. It's not clear. Of course. Of course. Yeah, this is two dimensions. So there is no, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The same thing exists on the whole matter.
Yeah, on the out of the entire process. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe I'll just state that. You know. So, if you take Dirichlet random walk on some domain intersection with take the graph that you get like this, and you start say from zero, okay, then this converges to something as epsilon goes to zero. And convergence here is you can specify exactly in some appropriate set of measures over sets. But so this is actually a theorem.
He proved this in three dimensions, but first he proved this in two dimensions.
Yes.
And this is proof that a robust theory works for all dimensions, or do you have to be dimension specific?
No, the proof, well, in dimensions bigger than three, this fact is easy, so I'm not sure if it's worth, right, if you have one proof which is two lines and another proof which is 100 pages, and so this doesn't, it's not a big improvement that it also gives the two lines, but in addition, not quite, because there's this issue there, if you remember from my LA talk about quasi loops. So every dimension needs a proof that. So you need a different proof in two dimensions, a different proof in three dimensions, a different proof in four, and a different proof in five and above. But
that's basically the issue of five.
Yes. Yeah. 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 So this is a proof of three dimensions. This is interesting in three dimensions. Yeah, it was.